This Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! But mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and Live Feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go ride on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
And today it's taking you right to the home of automotive dissemination. I was going to say almost brilliance, but I don't think that's really the right word to use. On WHPC, Motormouth Radio with your host Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. Isn't that right, Chris?
Oh, yes, Ray. If you're looking for an automotive talk show with character, with professionalism, or with accurate subject matter, I think you've come to the wrong place.
Yeah,
this is not it.
Right. Oh, well, yeah.
No, it's a classic show. We have a classic show prepared today because we're taking your calls, aren't we, at 516-572-7440, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct. You are totally
correct. That's perfect. I'm glad, because it's nice when you and I can talk to ourselves and talk to our listeners. I always find that you always get – it's always a mixed bag, and I never mind that at all. It's,
no.
It's always a lot of fun. And I just have to ask, I have to let you know that I had to solve a problem automotively that only a select group of individuals can tackle.
Oh, boy.
Wanna know what that was?
Yes, please.
I got a call from a good friend of mine that has an old Cadillac, a late 60s Cadillac convertible, and he had his horns rebuilt.
Ah.
And the horns got sent back, and he had them installed, and said, is there something wrong with the sound of the horns?
Uh-huh.
So he had to send me an audio of it. Let's see if I can do this.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can pull this off. Did you hear that?
I do hear that, yes.
Let's try that again. Right.
Yeah.
Those were the horns. That was the sound effect that I had received, and he asked me if there's something wrong with it.
Uh-huh.
And I said, yeah, it sounds too high.
Sounds like a train or something.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what happens. The mid-60s Cadillacs had a high note horn, a low note horn, and a trumpet horn. I hear the trumpet, I hear two highs.
Right.
It sounds a little too high, dude.
No low note. Yes.
No low note. And he checked it, and he sent out three horns, a low, a high, and a trumpet. He got back two highs and a trumpet.
Where did he send them? Who does that kind of work?
No, I don't know. I actually don't know, but he did mention it was a reputable dude, and I should find out who it was.
Yeah.
Mentioned it was reputable, but he had to send one of them back. And say, you sent the wrong one.
Yeah. You know, some of the cars, that they used to call that, they used to call them road horns.
Right.
And right. I had taken the horns out of my Riviera, the 71 Riv, and I now have those in my Fiat because there's a high and a low. They had the high and low note road horns, which...
Well, yeah, there was city horns and country horns at one time.
Right, I guess that's the same thing.
A lot of European cars have that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that not many other people will... know how to diagnose that problem. Mm-hmm. Unless you've owned half a dozen old Cadillacs, not many people know this. So that's why I got the I got the phone call.
Oh, great.
So yes, I've surpassed all other automotive technicians in the field of horn blowing.
That's great. That's very good.
Very proud of myself this week. Yeah.
That's a kind of an oddball diagnostic.
Well, it's the same individual that will call me up and ask me about the dwell angle on the 429, and I'm like, look it up in a book.
Yeah.
Well, you know it.
28 to 32. Yeah. Right. that's an easy one.
But, that's for sure. So, yeah, that was the joy I had this week.
Okay, that's good. Well, let me just mention quickly that if people want to have some joy, you want to turn the radio off and stop listening to us and have some joy. There's a show today. It's called Hot Rods for Heroes. It's going on right now if you find yourself in the area of Wantagh, Long Island. It is at the Wantagh train station. It started at 9 a.m. It's going to go to 3 p.m. And our own Centurion Cruises are behind this show, backing it up. And it is presented by Beyond the Badge, New York, and the Strong Island Stangs, which is a Mustang club. And you can get down there. There's food trucks, DJ, a rock wall, touch a truck, and fun for the whole family. So you want to get down there and check it out at the Wantagh train station. I know today people are kind of hedging their bets because it's overcast here.
Right.
But and then on the 18th, if you find yourself with something, you want to do something, be like Howie, the big man, and go to the Olds Spring Dust Off, which I guess this show used to be held in May, and that's why it was the Spring Dust Off, because now it's moved, and it's
the Summer Dust Off.
You know, they didn't want to, what do you call it? They didn't want to lose the name because they'd used it for almost 40-some-odd years at the time.
Right.
So that's at the Fortown Fireman's Training Center in Merrick on Merrick Road. And
the big man will be signing autographs and signing body parts if you ask him.
Most
ask nicely.
Most likely, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Joe had some information on those horns, too. He said by going by the GM parts manuals, I guess, they're considered an A and an F note horn.
Oh, good to know.
And that's true because everything audio does have a tone and that can go back to a musical scale. So
yes, it does. Yes, I was just going by my, what would you say, innate knowledge.
Yeah. Now,
horn blowing.
That means you could actually take, like in the old days, a tuning fork and strike it and listen to that horn and see if they're in syncopathic rhythm. You know,
pitch.
Right, in the same pitch.
Yes. Wow.
And there's actually a little stud on the back of the horns that you can turn that actually tunes them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
sometimes if you luck out, you can actually get them to work.
Right.
Turning that thing. I know I've had my fair share of attempts. And a lot of times the screw will come off in your hand, and once that happens, you're done.
Last year when I put the new bumpers on my car, I went to the old bumpers that I have, and I stripped them of the brackets and the horns, and I had this pile of horns on the workbench. I said, let me check them. So I have a 20 or 30 amp power supply. I was able to, I think out of like six or eight horns, I had like one that worked. The rest of them just went, ugh.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what happens. Yeah. They just go,
But I wasn't aware that they're rebuildable, so that's interesting. Yep. If you get that information, pass it on, because I'd like to, because now I'm thinking,
I will do that.
I was going to like to sell these things, but who wants to buy a horn that doesn't work? But if it's reasonable enough to rebuild them, I may send them out to be rebuilt and then sell them as being refurbished and working.
Yes, how nice.
Right.
Invest a little money into them, and I'm sure things like that will go.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody always needs a good horn.
Can't hurt.
Everybody always needs a good horn. 516-572-7440 is the phone number to get a hold of us right here at Motormouth Radio. It gives you something else to do with your finger. 516-572-7440. Yeah, I had a laugh because I always said it about my Triumph. Whenever I used to take the Triumph out and go to a parking lot, I always used to park as far away as I could in any sort of parking lot. And I would always go into the store wherever I was going and come back out minutes later and find four other cars parked around it, all in that same section in the nosebleed section of the parking lot.
Right.
Well, I found that the 300 does it too, the Chrysler 300. If I park it in one spot in the Home Depot parking lot all the way in the back, I come back and find a whole boatload of cars around it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Why does this happen? And I was thinking about, there was a time, remember you and I were in the parking lot at the radio station, and there was not a single car in the parking lot, mm-hmm. except for yours and mine. And we were parked one spot away from one another, and we were standing in that spot talking.
Yes.
And what happened?
A car came in and wanted to park right in that spot.
In that spot.
And the whole lot was open. You're right. Right.
The whole lot. And someone wanted to park right there between both of our cars where we were standing.
Right.
And it was like not even a joke. The person wanted legitimately to park there.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you out of your mind?
No, lady, we're holding a spot for somebody. You can't come.
You're right. That's
what... Unbelievable.
I thought that that was crazy. And that's it prompted me to think about, you were mentioning something last week. We were talking about how to merge into traffic.
Yeah.
And we never got past that because the phones were lighting up crazy at 516-572-7440.
It happened to me on the way here. I was merging onto the highway in the FJ, and, you know, I don't like to floor the thing. I mean, it's a truck, so it you know, it doesn't accelerate like a Corvette, but still, I have a lane that eventually... See, I'm kind of funny with this stuff. Like, the merge lane...
You're funny with this stuff? You? Go on.
It turns into the right lane. So, like, I don't have a choice. I have to be in the right lane at some point, you know?
Right.
So, and the question, you know, usually, and if I see cars coming in that right lane, and they're going 60-something, you know, you defer to them, you let them go because they're faster vehicles. But sometimes you'll see a car that's back a ways, you know, and then I'll get over, and...
Yeah. You got enough room to jump in, yeah, sure.
And then, like, and where I get on, it's like just two exits past that, there's a long, long entrance ramp that ends up doing the same thing. And people there constantly tend to... They'll come down the entrance ramp pretty fast, but they'll get on a highway and then be going, like, 50. Or 45. And you're already doing like 55, 60. And I'm like, no, you know, there should be some ethics here. So there's like, hey, if I'm going faster than you and I'm in a truck, it's like, what are you doing jumping in front of me and like hitting the brakes? I don't know. So I figured.
Well, it was actually the first Motor Mouth Radio Honor Group. I don't know if you remember, but that was the honor group. If you got in front of someone in the fast lane and slowed down to like 52 miles an hour, you were part of the Motor Mouth Radio Honor Group of the hour.
Well,
at the time.
That happened to me yesterday. I was coming home from the UD, saw Dougie and Johnny, was out there with Joe D, and had a good time as always. It's like it's like home out there. And on the way home, I'm coming down, you know, Northern State, going to Meadowbrook, and I'm in the left lane. I'm doing 65 with traffic.
Right.
And apparently, you know, when I came in like in the middle lane, that's how it merges in. And then I signaled and went to the left lane. And because I looked and I didn't see anybody there. And then I don't know why, but I looked at the mirror again, and there was this guy right on my tail. Like,
oh, really?
And I'm like, where did you come from? Like, you must have buzzed up either trying to, like, if I said, thank God you weren't trying to cut me off and get in the lane before me, because I never saw you. You know, I only saw you. And now he's on my tail and I can see he's animated. I'm like, yeah, fine.
You gave him the salute.
I kept it. Doug and I were talking about road rage these days, and you got to be careful because the next thing that happens is someone shooting. So
yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I try really hard not to, well, especially with a police truck. You don't want to do any road range antics with that.
Right.
So you got to keep it cool.
So I did. You know, I kept it low, but I stayed where I was. And the guy, as soon as he had a chance, bolted over to the middle lane, accelerates up, and I didn't think he was going to have the room to do it, but he squeezed himself between me and the car that was like right on my front right fender.
Wow.
Got right in front of me, and of course does a brake check. So I was already anticipating it. So I kind of slowed down. I got off the gas. I was like, all right, buddy, if that makes you feel better, you know, if that makes you feel good, go right ahead. You know,
exactly. Welcome to Long Island. I got it.
See, yeah. And I kept it at 65, and then, you know, he eventually took off. I'm like, all right, if that's how it's going to be, you know, fine.
You know what I found? Did that happen to you when you were by yourself, or did you have any family member in the car with you at the time?
I was alone. Yeah, I was alone.
You were alone.
Yeah.
Do you know that never happens to me when I'm alone?
Really?
always happens to me when there's a family member in the car.
That's odd.
I still can't figure that one out. Yeah. If I'm by myself, everybody stays away from me. If I'm driving with a family member in the car, all the antics happen. And it's so funny because, like, you're all ready to get heated over it. And I look over and there's a family member in the car and you can't.
Right.
You have to. Okay, let this one happen. And sometimes I think it's a sign. There's your sign. I think it's a sign.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like, don't be stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think you're right.
S-T-O-O-P-I-T. Don't be stupid.
Right.
That's what it is. So, and it's something I've learned. It's been a pattern for many, many years that I get all the dimwits and knuckleheads and maniacs, usually when I have a wife or a child in the car.
That's an internal self-imposed kind of check, I guess, right. Which is, that's good.
This is the joy of driving a decommissioned police car, because everybody stays in their lane, they watch their P's and Q's, and I don't mind. The only thing I have to do, my only responsibility, is keep the car clean. That's my only responsibility. Make sure the car's clean, because when it's not clean, it looks like an ordnance vehicle. It looks like something like from the Parks Department or something like that.
I did have a really weird sighting yesterday, which is, everybody says this, like, you know, gee, I never noticed that vehicle before until I bought one. Now it's all I see, or until you, like, Matt Conley O'Brien started seeing FJs everywhere. He goes, once you got one, that's all I see. I'm like, yeah, it's because, yeah, you're aware of it. Me too. Well, I'm on the Northern State. And I'm driving this black and white FJ, and what do I see comes in the right lane? A black and white FJ with Pennsylvania plates, motors passed. I'm like, hey, look at that. Within a half mile in the left lane comes up a black and white FJ. There were three of us.
Wow.
What are the chances of that? You know, what are the chances?
That's crazy. Amazing. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's true. It's true. I believe it. Now, if you were driving along and you saw a 65 gold GTO go by.
Oh, yeah. I'd look for, like, where's my garage keys?
You got to call the police.
Right. 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 Exactly. Exactly.
That's funny. Yeah, I'm getting since I've been working on the cars and in the garage, I've been getting a lot of people doing the pointing over the normal vehicle. They do the point from the driveway. They stand there and point, like, almost over the car, like they arc their finger and they go, you got something in the garage over there.
Uh-huh.
I've been having those conversations lately. Wow. What is that?
The word is out in the neighborhood, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. It only took, what, 3 years.
Yeah.
It's the truth. It's funny because the car attracts the strangest attention from people now. I get either their old Harley guys pull up next to me, a lot of flannel shirt guys, especially in this weather type of guys, and kids.
Right.
Kids, for some reason, young boys, like, what, 11, 12, tweens, they are riding on bicycles, get a lot of thumbs up from that group as well, which is kind of strange.
No, I've seen that as well with kids, yeah.
Women hate it. Women don't go near it.
As witnessed by your wife's reaction.
Yes. She walks past it holding her nose.
Yeah.
But it doesn't smell.
None. Yet. Right. Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been an ordeal, and it's been a fight the last couple of weeks. I don't know if I mentioned it to you, but I'm erasing all traces of Newport out of this car.
Okay. Yeah.
Doing that.
Which is not easy.
No.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
And I have found that one of the last modifications I've done to this car has been the door panels.
Right.
And we've talked about the door panels ad nauseum on this program, unfortunately. But I have found that using a heat gun, a combination of a heat gun and chrome polish, and I hate to say it, acetone,
right,
in the form of nail polish remover, because I've seen stains on some of these doors, panels that are just baked on.
Right.
So even that, and I've realized that. Now, I always say this with a certain amount of caution, but the acetone nail polish remover did not do any damage to the pleather sheen, the surface of the pleather, mm-hmm, of the material that covers the door panel. Didn't really, like, I expected to fog it up a little bit or melt it.
Right.
But no, the stuff is pretty durable when it's not cracking.
Yeah, true. Very good.
It's pretty durable. So I was able to use a combination of those things and get the door panels fairly intact.
Right.
And now I was reading something recently, and this is why I started to do this project in the manner that I'm doing it, that someone had written down in an article about a car saying that the car looks like it's getting old gracefully. And I thought about that. I said, you know what? I like that.
I read something like that recently, too. I don't remember where it was.
I can't remember because, you know, it's the your knees are the first thing to go.
Yeah.
The second thing to go. I can't remember the first thing to go. But, yeah, it was an article that I read, and I thought to myself, that is basically what I like. I like when a car gets old gracefully.
Yeah.
Where everything is there, but there's some cracks. There's a little bit of imperfection. There's some wrinkles. It doesn't look too over-restored. And for some reason, it's like when you and I have done this, we've driven cars that were in prime.
Yeah, sure.
Right? The whole car in prime. Mm-hmm. How many times have, like, your GTO, how many times have people stepped up to you when that car was completely in prime and opened up a conversation about it?
I got a ton of interaction. And I liked it in prime because it just so happened the prime they used had like a very light, like a lilac type of a tone, like a very,
it did,
yeah, and
it was pink,
you know, more like a light purplish.
Yeah,
so
purple,
when you see
maybe
the car, you knew it was great, but you'd pick up that little bit of a, and people would say, "Wow, what color is that?" They thought it was painted. I'm like, "Nah, it's a primer." So yeah, I thought I really liked it. It did evoke a lot of conversation, and just the car in prime. Certain cars in prime don't look so great. I think my car in prime, it looked good. You know,
it looked good.
Kind of had a tough look to it. 55 Chevy is another one. They look great in prime. You know,
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's definitely a top car in prime.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is what I've noticed. And it's the same when you have a car that is getting old gracefully as well. It becomes approachable.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes like a, I can't call it a canvas, but maybe, yeah, like a blank canvas where you can come up with your own ideas. To me, a car, when it's over-restored or restored magnificently, and there's nothing, I don't want to take away from any of those cars. It's a ton of work that goes into all of them. But it's almost like they're not approachable.
Yeah.
Like now it's a perfect question to ask. Now that the GTO is restored, is it approachable?
Yeah, well, but it's not finished. It still has those mismatched seats in it, so that's kind of good. Well, I will say this. A car like you described that's got some wear marks, mm-hmm, to me, when I see those cars, I think, oh, yeah, I can open a slide in, start. This car is going to start right up, and I can drive it anywhere. It's been tested, proven, there's no danger drives involved. This thing is like good to go. That's the feeling I get when I see a car like that.
True.
Which who doesn't like that, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. Because I still ride by your dictum, mm-hmm, which is chrome don't get you home.
Yeah, very true.
Which I love. I love that line. And, and even when you, it's a shame when you see a motorcycle on the side of the road and you yell it out.
Right, right.
hope it stays broken.
Yeah.
No, you don't want to do that. I don't do that. I don't do any of those. Keep your cards and letters to yourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't do that.
Not very
but yeah,
true.
That's something that I've realized, and I'm realizing it now even with these door panels that I've put on the car, which are 300 door panels.
Yeah.
I took the Newport panels off the car, and now I've replaced them with 300. So
right,
when you are now 10 feet away from this thing, it's pretty close, pretty darn close to being what it's...
It's getting closer.
It's getting much closer.
Nah, it's good.
I had to do it. You know why I really wanted to get this done? Because I had half this basement filled with door panels and door panel parts and everything on the bench. Mm. And I'm like, I got to clean this basement up. So in order to clean this basement up, I have to wrap up these dopey projects that I have constantly going on.
Right, right.
And half these things that are in pieces half the time that I'll get to this later.
Yeah.
And I'm not completing anything. So this was one of those projects I had to, it was taking up a ton of room mm-hmm. that I had to complete. So it was done. It's done.
Good.
And I think on the hottest day of the year I was out there, which gave me this slick golden tan.
Sure.
Yes, well, give me this farmer's tan.
I'll tell you, the other day, it was like 100 degrees in the shop, and I was under a dashboard, and it was hotter under there, let me tell you.
Ugh, yeah, when you get sticky and sweat starts rolling into your eye and burning.
I started like seeing the spots on my shirt, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we're in the middle of diagnosing an issue that's a little elusive, but I think we got it on the run. And like I mentioned on the Plane and Traffic show Thursday night, it was the Sinju syndrome, you know,
which, the Sinju syndrome,
right? Which Joe so eloquently coined for us. Why don't you describe that for people? Because they always ask, "What the hell are they? What's a Sinju syndrome?"
Sinju is incredibly complex, and it's usually if you've this problem popped up since you did the other problem,
it can refer to anything. It could even work in your home, but in a shop, let's say the customer comes in and you do something, they come back the next day and they got that look like, what's the matter? Well, since you put that washer fluid in my car,
yes,
my brake lights don't work, or my transmission slips, or my headliner fell down. And you're like, well, wait a minute, you were the last one in there, yeah. So it's since you were there, it's your. Well,
exactly. That's better. Better put. Yes.
I came into the shop and Mike was standing over the Grand National and it was running. And I said, okay, good. You know, I had just done some major work to it recently before that. And then all of a sudden we heard this gurgling. Imagine the worst stomach issues you've ever had before you've exploded.
Oh, boy.
And that's what it sounded like to me.
I can imagine.
And Michael, is that a bearing? I'm like, no, that ain't no bearing. That's not a bearing. And then you're looking like everything looks fine. And then I said, it's the coolant. I saw the water level rising in the overflow bottle, like boom, boom, boom. I said, this thing is overheating. And then we both looked and said, the fan's not on. I said, you know what? Let's shut it off. Let's close this hood and get away from it. Because I thought, on a car that old, something was going to let go and scalding fluid was going to be all over. Well, it didn't. It held together. But the question was, why didn't the fan come on?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Mike asked me, why didn't the fan come on? I'm like, I don't know. Something happened. He goes, well, yeah, well, you were the last guy here. You did the brakes. You know, what did you do to it? I'm like, I didn't do anything to it. I don't think he put it that way. But it was now up to me to try and find out why. Since I did the brakes, the fan doesn't work, and the diagnostic has proven to be a little tougher than I thought it was going to be because I'm finding incompatibilities in that car, like a fuse box that has a fuse for the fans, but there's only one terminal for the fuse, and you know, and if you want to see that, go to any of our social media pages. Motormouth Radio on our website. Well, it's not on the website, but Motormouth Radio on Facebook or Twitter or Real_Motormouth Radio on Twitter. And you'll see a picture of that.
Looking at it now, yes.
Yeah, and I said, well, what the heck? Every relay, fan relay, you know, gets a battery power, but it also gets an ignition source, a keyed ignition source, which in this case is terminal 86, or in GM speak, it's terminal 5.
Right.
And the wire is on both of the relay sockets, but there's nothing in the fuse box. So you say, well, what the heck is going on there? And I'll tell you what. I will tell you what's going on there. It's the bottom of the hour. Let's take care of some business. When we come back, we'll wrap this. But do we have an honor group of the bottom of the hour?
Of course we do. I'm still trying to figure out the price of a coolant temp sensor and two or three relays.
Yeah.
And we're going to dope out how much that costs in comparison to what your time is worth.
Okay.
But anyway, we have a Motormouth Radio on a group of the hour. If you think your car suffers from an identity crisis, yes, sir, if your car is not completely stuck, you know what I mean? You know, the parts from different cars powering it. Are there any foreign parts mixed up in your domestically built vehicle? Does your vehicle sport old rebuilt parts as well as recently produced parts purchased out of a catalog? Have you gone so far as to completely change the model designation of your vehicle to simply suit your needs? Like anybody's ever done that before, right?
Yeah, right.
So if your car is questioning its sense of self, you are part of the Motormouth Radio on the group of the hour. There you go.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I tell you what, you hold the line on that end.
Yes, sir.
I'll hold the line on this end. We'll play a couple of things. We'll take care of some business, and we'll come back and talk about this pesky problem while you do some web research. So keep it where you got it on 90.3 WHPC.
To the Motor Mouth.
Oh.
You know them.
So nice talking to you guys. I miss you.
You love them.
I heard you talking about us, so I thought I'd call in.
Motor Mouth!
You want to serve dinner to them.
How you doing, guys? Sorry to interrupt.
How are you, Ray?
Chris is the sharpest drill bit, right?
This is the first time that I'm actually listening live and working on a car.
Our trained staff of two will help.
I'll call you back when I have the solution.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. That definitely points me in the right direction.
Now hold your breath. I hope you're sitting down.
Motor Mouth!
A tornado of urban legend and BS.
No, I'm not going to wax my Johnson. I'm going to wax my Evinrude.
As always, you are consummate professional.
When I listen on my laptop, I got to keep that thing screaming.
I don't mean to blow you up on the airwaves.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Oh, this is why I call wrong number by accident.
I want you all to know, sometimes I don't even wear pants.
I have no clue, and I can't hit it with a hammer to fix it.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
So I got to give you guys a call and talk to you.
Motor Mouth!
I'm in the car now.
They're going to talk about working on cars, but they're not going to work on yours.
There is no answer, and it makes you think, and I like the things that make you think.
What are you doing here?
I'm on break.
Okay, good. So are we.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motormouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHBC.
Motormouth!
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
This is Motormouth Radio, your one-hour automotive talk show. And now, here are your Motormouths, Chris Switzer and Ray Guarino.
Yes, and we are back with more Motormouth Radio. Thank you, Kim, for that great introduction. Yes, we are back, holding the line with Toto, those fine gentlemen from, I think they're from Canada, I don't know where the hell they're from. But anyway, so, did you have a nice rest?
Yes, I did.
That's good. Good. That's yes, very important.
Just woke up.
All right.
516-572-7440, if you want to prevent Ray from talking about his Grand National coolant temp sensor issue. But
right.
If you want to know more about it, just keep listening.
You know, just like we talk about all the time, forgetting things and being forgetful and like that. I mean, it affects all of us, me certainly. I had what I did is I didn't have any diagnostic information in front of me, so I used what I had in my brain. So what I did is I said, let me see if these fans work at all. And what I did was, by separating the relays from their their blocks. There's three relays. There's one for the low speed fan, one for the high speed. It's a, one fan, but there's a low speed, a high speed, and a delay relay. The way they switch between low and high is there's a big ceramic power resistor on the fan. And when low speed signal goes, the voltage goes through the power resistor to drop the voltage to make the fan run slower. And when the high signal goes, it just gives it full 12 volts and you get high fan. So, pull the relays out of the sockets, and what you can do is go to terminal 30, 30 to 87, which is power to ground, power to device. And I found low speed, the fan came on low. I went to the high relay, boom, and it came on high. So I knew everything between there worked. I said, oh, okay, sure. The fan does work. So now there's still a coolant temperature sensor, and I explained this to a couple people how that circuit works. And it wasn't until I was home in my chair, nodding off watching YouTube videos, that, again, replaying it in my head, I replayed it to myself and said, oh, you idiot. I know why. I know what the problem is.
Yeah.
The coolant temperature sensor, the engine heats up. The coolant temperature sensor says, hey, I'm hot. Cool me down. I'm trying, sure, to do my, best Joe teacher impersonation, because this is how Joe teaches the class. And the coolant temp sensor now talks to who? Talks to the ECM, the computer, and says, hey, teacher, send that voltage to the fans, which then commands closes the relay, the appropriate relay, goes to the fan, and the fan comes on. So that's why the fuse box doesn't have a fuse, because in 87, they stopped that. They had it in there up to 86. Car probably has up an 86, leftover fuse box in it from the factory. Sure. And now the computer does the commanding. So now we either have a bad computer or we have to diagnose the computer. So I was downloading all these diagrams with pinouts and whatnot, and now I can go at it again with a fresh head and an old diagnostic tool and see if that's the issue. And it may be just a case that, this ECM is bad. So that's what happens. Diagnostics is not always easy unless it's something you do every day. The guys who do it every day on the same cars, or someone like Joe or John Rogers, the guys who do it on multiple cars every day, heavily. Eric the Car Guy is another guy. I was just conversing with him back and forth over the last couple of weeks. Another guy sees all sorts of different cars. So,
right. Meanwhile, you can get any coolant temp sensor from around $13.99 to $26.99 off the top of my head. And the coolant fan relays run about $8 a piece.
Nice.
Just letting you know.
What I did was, that was one of the things I wanted to check. I said, I don't know if the temp sensor is good, because if that's bad or the wires from it are bad, obviously there's no signal. So again, having no information, I took it out and there's two pins. So I know it's a sensor that's going to change with heat. So I measured the resistance of the sensor. I got
so do you. You change with heat as well.
I definitely do. Mm-hmm. I measured the sensor, the resistance, and I got, I think it was about, it was either 1,700 or 1,300 ohms. I was like, okay, we'll consider that room temp. Then I had it chucked in the vise, and I used my shrink tubing heat gun, and I heated the sensor with the gun, and I took my temperature probe on the bottom of the sensor, and I read temperature. So when that thing got up to like 200 degrees, I measured the resistance again, and it was down to like 300 ohms. So I said, okay, I don't know if those numbers are in spec or out of spec, but what I saw was a change in resistance, which means the sensor is doing something.
It's reacting, yes.
So the sensor isn't dead. It may not be pristine, but it isn't dead. So for now, for all intents and purposes, we'll say that part is good.
Operating, yes.
Which, again, brings you back to wires and or the computer itself. So, again, this is how the diagnostics goes. You just kind of just whittle down the massive pile of crap until you get to one string of it and then a finger that says, it's right here. So,
I've had Saturday nights like that.
Oh, boy. I know. Not funny. So we'll see where that leads us. We'll look into it and see. But
wow.
Yeah, the guys.
You're on the precipice of. I just don't really feel that it's the computer on this one. I don't know why. I'm thinking we're talking about a car that's like led somewhat of a sheltered life, maybe.
Well, that's that. You see, when I was looking at that fuse box and saying, "What the hell? How does this happen on the fuse box?" you know, somebody, you know, people tell me, oh, that must have been changed. Somebody screwed around. I'm like, listen, it's a one-owner car. The guy bought it new in 87. It's the shop owner's brother-in-law, so he knows who the guy is. The car's got 70,000 miles on it. He's babied it. So, yeah, it hasn't, I don't think it's been screwed with, you know.
Or, I mean, it hasn't been sitting outside.
Well, yes, he does park it outside under a cover, unfortunately.
All right.
I mean, I don't see any damage, any rodent damage or chewed wires. I don't see any acorns. I don't see any signs of that. Doesn't mean that hasn't happened in a place. I mean, it's a kind of a tight engine bay, even though it's a V6 in that car. It is, things all kind of, especially where the wiring is concerned. So
turbo takes up a lot of room. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the way it's situated, you know? So anyway, it's the diagnostic process. What are you going to do?
This is something, you know, you're touching on a subject that I've always lamented about, and that is restoring these cars. Dan Short mentioned it 2 weeks ago, and he's gotten me on this thread where he turns away 80s vehicles to restore them, and he claims it's because of the plastics, that they're not being reproduced and they're very tough to repair.
Right.
And we understand that. And I'm assuming you're doing the same thing I'm doing, where it comes down to a lot of automotive restoration or a lot of automotive repair comes down to fixing broken plastic pieces because they're not available.
Right.
And I've noticed it between clips and moldings and panels. It's become a problem. So this does become a problem for anybody that's trying to restore an 80s vehicle. Now, what happens, not only are the plastics, I'm going off the track here, not only are the plastics a problem, but the technology is becoming an issue as well. And we're talking about major components that have components built in within them that will eventually dry out.
Right.
You have chips, you have capacitors, you have stuff soldered to motherboards that have a lifespan.
Yeah.
And they are integral to the operation of the vehicle. It's not like something that just runs windshield wipers here. We're talking about something that monitors the operation of the car. So when that goes bad, then what happens? And now, mind you, we're trudging along here. Time is moving on, and 80s vehicles are now 40 years old, 30 to 40 years old.
Yeah.
When we were kids, 50s and 40s cars were 30 and 40 years old.
Yeah.
You know? So now we're getting into that. Now, these cars are being preserved and coddled and cuddled by individuals, but these things are happening, and these are problems that can probably be easily solved in a 50s or 60s or even 70s vehicle, early 70s. But when you start getting into 80s vehicles and the technology is 30 plus years old, 30 to 40 years old, now it's questionable.
Right.
And now what happens about 90s vehicles or vehicles in the 2000s? They're 20 years old now.
Sure.
And I'm like, holy smokes! Between you in the 90s and the aughts, the 2000s, you have the introductions of like multiple computers in vehicles. Now these things are also subject to drying out of components and motherboards. And so this is something that I'm finding fascinating, and how maybe this may be a new cottage market on rebuilding all of these components, but maybe not. I mean, I've heard already that if you had like a Lincoln Mark 8, that you can't get a ride control, command control. You can't get one. If your car bounces up like a cat being petted, boink. You know,
actually, they drop.
Rear end pops. Or if it drops, yeah, even worse, if it drops.
That's been going on for a while. That's been going on for quite a while.
Stuff like that. You know, it has now got to the point where that expensive vehicle you paid a ton of money for is now next to trash because it's now sitting on the ground like a Citroen DM.
I've been thinking about this, and I think the first thing I'm going to do is before I even use the scanner, because I want to use bidirectional control and see if I can make the thing, you know, work through the circuit, but I'm going to access that computer and I want to see what happens when I pull that kick panel, because maybe that's where the surprise is waiting. You know, you never know.
And
let's say everything is okay. There's no intrusion, no rodential intrusion. I'm going to take that, the there's two pins, there's two connectors on that. I'll pull them both off and look at them for corrosion or any signs of stuff, right? Clean as needed. And then do the wiggle test. Put them back on, wiggle, get a better connection. I just did that with an AM radio this week. I fixed it by just cleaning connections.
Oh, I believe it.
Now the thing came right back. It sounds so much better. So the
dirt is the enemy. That's true.
The Italian house party never sound better. Never sounded better yesterday. So, thank you, John LaBarca. So I'm going to do that first and see, because we talk about that. You know, things just, they take a set and they build. Now, the things I've taken apart on that car have all looked good. I haven't seen a lot of corrosion or ugly things anywhere. So, but maybe that's where, you know, maybe that's where it lies, hopefully. And then from there, mm-hmm. we'll just go forward from there and see what kind of misery awaits.
And it's very viable. I remember looking at a trouble tree on that Seville. I had a hard time getting it to run correctly. And in one of the trouble trees was a bent pin in the connection. And I'm like, how in the world can that happen?
It does.
How can that happen? Yeah. I said, no, it can't happen. That plug has never been apart from the component. How can that happen? Right. And I would always skip over it. And I've replaced parts and you know, rack my brain trying to figure out what the problem was. And finally, I lamented and went right for that plug, pulled it apart, and guess what? There was the plug. The wire had heated up.
Yeah.
And melted the whole connection. And,
right.
It was. But it was exactly what the trouble tree had said.
Yeah.
Take a look at the connections and see where they are.
Well,
you're barking up the right tree.
The trouble trees were written by engineers who worked on the cars. And we were talking about this just... I don't know if we were talking about this on Thursday or if we were talking about it yesterday. see right, what was I saying, right, about forgetting those things? But the thought was that one of the guys had said he didn't like the way they did it because they would gather around like a lunch table or at a bar or something and kind of spitball and say, okay, we got to come up with a trouble tree for this circuit. Now, they designed the circuit and built it, so they know it by the back of their hands.
Right.
So they would just kind of, okay, you know, test this. If this, go here. If not, go there. You know a flow chart. And, but without having the car in front of them to actually see where there are maybe little, you know, to say just, okay, go there on a trouble tree, a piece of paper, it looks great. But in the car itself, like, how do you get there from here? You can't get, you can't access it.
Right.
Which does happen sometimes with trouble trees that you say, well, okay, the information's right, but the execution isn't there. They no one actually tried to do this because
no engineer. That's the case. Yeah,
exactly.
No engineer tried to do it.
Yeah,
and that is true. You're right about that. But yeah, this is one of those problems that you just hope it's not the onboard computer. But that's why I would run a diagnostics on the computer. And if you get a code that says that the computer is malfunctioning, then I think you have full, rein to go chasing after the computer instead of anything else.
I talked to Joe about this, and what I'm going to do is use the scanner, the Tech One, and do what's called bidirectional control. We mentioned last week where the scanner now takes over and commands the devices. So in this case, you'd go in and find the cooling fan low and say on, and the scanner basically goes right to the computer and says, okay, command that thing on. You don't have to do it. I'm telling you to do it.
Right.
And then if it comes on, then you can say off, and you can cycle on, off, on, off. Then you can do high fan, on, off. And if that works, you say, okay, well, that means that everything in the loop from the ALDL connector that I'm plugged into through the car is working properly. And if it still isn't working, then that's what I said. Then what do you do? Because... And it's odd that if you have bidirectional control, it doesn't work.
Right. So, you're going to get something to not work.
So the bet is like, okay, if bidirectional control doesn't work, there is a problem. Like there's literally a faulty relay that won't close or a wire that's broken or shorted or a computer that's bad. So then you still have to go to the next level of diagnostics, which a lot of times means hands and eyes on the situation.
Yes.
But that's where
I am. Focusing, I would focus on that first.
Yeah.
The wiring itself. For some reason, I am not a fan of GM wiring from 1980 to like 1995.
Well, yeah,
not a fan of it.
We could have bad relays. I mean, they fail all the time. That's a part that goes bad. So that could be. You know, and at some point you have to say, okay, let's get a couple of those, and we'll, you know, if the diagnostic, I believe if the diagnostics support it. You know, like sometimes you're lucky and you have them laying around in the shop, and you can just say, okay, let me just take one and plug it in. You know,
right.
That's nice. That's why it's nice to keep good, known, working parts. That's why the dealership has the heads up over all of us, because they have new, you know.
Never ever worked.
you know how that goes, right? Let's see. That was one of course, that was one of Joe's favorites, and here it is.
Guys, we all know what new spells
never ever worked.
That's right.
Yes. So just because it's there doesn't mean it's right.
I had an issue. You helped me out with it with the Sunbird, the 1990 Sunbird that I had, where the car would just quit on its own and would not flatly refuse to start. And I did a credit card repair on that, just threw all kinds of junk at it, and it didn't solve the problem at all. And finally, I realized that there was a wiring harness that ran down alongside the four-cylinder and just ran under the engine, and I couldn't access it. So it was just a bunch of bare wires. Not bare, I mean, it didn't have the plastic insulation, the sheeting. That must have just decomposed. Right. So what I did was, as a gamble, I took a piece of good sheeting and ran it down the hose into the darkness, basically, until it stopped. and that was it. Cut it at the end, cut the sheeting at the end, molded it in with the rest of the good sheeting, called it a day.
Uh-huh.
And the car never quit.
Yeah, good. Well, because the wire was probably shorting on something, metal or grounding. And then,
whoop. Yes.
Yeah,
and I couldn't see it because I'd have to either pull the motor or undo the whole entire harness, like you say.
Right.
Working with a certain amount of limited time, you can't do that. So it's like, let me try this and see if it works.
Yeah.
And it did.
That's how these goes. The relays are on the driver's side fender well, on the fender, like over the wheel. And you look at the harness as this big honking, like, you know, it's about an inch and a half harness, and it just kind of goes down, twists behind the brake system, so, and just gets lost on the firewall.
Right. Like, disappears.
Yeah, with the engine out, that thing was easy to get at.
Oh, you know, sure.
Not now, so.
Then the engine was never out of this car, right?
No.
So we can safely remove someone messing with it unnecessarily.
I think so. Sure. Yeah, I do. I think so.
So that can be removed. Like anybody doing any mods on the car or some sort of hokey mechanical.
You know, I'm hoping for something stupid like a flaky connector, you know, like a dirty connection at the computer. Maybe a bad relay would be nice. And even if it is the ECM, at least it's a part that can be replaced. And there is a guy locally who deals with computers. So, and the good thing is, like with the Buicks, you have that whole subset of all the Grand National guys across the country who.
Sure.
You know, who know where to go and what to do. So there's,
you got nice club support with a car like that, sure.
And the car does run. You know, so if he drives it in the cooler weather, he probably never have a problem because he wouldn't need the fan. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah, maybe in sub-zero weather.
Well, not that just, bad. I mean,
just to watch the ice.
No, it really doesn't go out in the winter either. So,
but yeah, that's really the. A lot of times, you know what I do now? I look at the road and I go, do we see a lot of these cars on the road anymore?
You see them at car shows. I do see quite a few at the cruise nights and car shows. Guys have them.
Oh, yeah, that's about it. Yeah, that's about it. But you don't see them on the highway anymore.
Well, yeah,
I remember the old days, Ray, when the police on the Merritt Parkway here used to use Grand National.
I mean, what was the last time you saw just a Regal driving around? You don't even see those.
Oh, gosh, no.
You know?
No, certainly not. No Regals, no Cutlasses, no Monte Carlos.
No.
Gone.
Right.
Gone. I can tell you this. There's only one car I see, older models of this vehicle, I see more than most. And I always keep an eye out, like you always keep an eye out for FJs. I always look for what is the oldest car you will see on the road. And I would love to know listeners' views on this as well.
Uh-huh.
What's the oldest car you see on a regular basis? And to me, it's any late 80s, early 90s Honda Accords.
Okay. Yeah.
See them everywhere.
Yeah.
See them everywhere. You will not see anything, at least I haven't seen anything on the road on a regular basis that's older.
They're probably still highly stolen, too, for their parts.
well, they're easy to,
yeah,
they're easy
right.
to acquire.
Sure.
But yeah, and I remember I had my 90, was it 89 or 90? 90, 91, it was around there.
Right.
That car always ran. It always ran. It changed the battery, it would run. That
right.
was it. It just always ran. I never used it because I used to leave it in front of my house as a marker.
Right.
I would drive it on the driveway during alternate side and put it back in the street. So I think I owned it for 2 years. I went 6 miles with
yeah.
it. But it never ran. It never really ran long periods of time, but it always ran.
Right, right.
Never had a problem with it. Never had a problem with the car.
Sure.
And I think, oh, wait, I did. I think the brake switch, I think, decomposed on it one time, and I found the pieces lying on the 10-minute brake switch swap, and it was done.
Yeah, that's why somebody asked me, why'd you buy a Toyota? I said, well, Toyota tough. I said, this thing's just, it's going to go forever. You know, they just, yeah. they do. If they are in good shape and they were taken care of somewhat and maintained, they can go a long time. It's just mm-hmm. a great bulletproof vehicle, you know?
Oh, sure so. Is, yeah. The only thing you have to worry about with Toyotas is their plastic pieces.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times if they have a plastic handle on the door, you figure about 150,000 miles before that thing lets go.
Yeah,
or plastic switches, the window switches on right. anything that's over 100,000 miles, the plastic switches will literally snap off in your hand. It's just the way it is. It's
sure.
the plastic decomposition, just like everything else. Just like this show, just
That's
decomposes
right.
every once in a while and kind of smells funny.
Exactly.
It's like this show. It's
Very
decomposing.
True. That's true.
The plastic, the hosts, the subject matter, just decomposing in front of our eyes, right?
And
it's just turning to poop.
That's perfect, because you're running us right up to our out, because Kim is here getting ready for Thunder Road, and we are going to decompose ourselves right the heck out of the studio. So
exactly. That's a good idea. So if you get that stomach urge, that gurgling...
Oh,
that you're talking about.
So as of, yeah, well.
you need to remove it.
Right. So as of yet, we don't have a guest lined up for next week. We'll see what happens. I got a few people in the wings. I have a T-shirt coming your way. Our good friend Hal from Hal About It. He's the guy that does all the Stromberg. We had him on about 3 weeks ago or so. He sent some T-shirts, so I have one that's coming your way.
Thank you so much. It's
and
wonderful.
We will send that out, and you'll get that. And that's it. So what do we always say to people who may want to follow us?
Right. Watch the gurgling, take care of your decomposition, and don't follow us home.
Right. All right. So for Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, Motor Mouth Radio signing off for this week. We'll be back next week and with more fun and merriment. So keep it. You know where to go to keep it where you got it.
All right. See you. Bye.
All right. So long, Chris. See you.